Okay, so as we said, we're covering the material in week 10, chapters 20 and 21. We're going to cover the, that of course covers the giving of cities, God's giving of cities to the Levites, including the six cities designated as cities of refuge. Chapter 20 talks about those cities of refuge, and then 21 in a broader sense talks about, lists off the cities, all 48 of them given to the Levites. So the eastern and western tribes have taken possession of the inheritance God has given them, and now just one tribe remains. And what has God said about the inheritance of the Levites? What has he said about that matter, Norman?
Their inheritance was the priesthood. They would not have any land granted to them other than the land right around the city so they could cultivate the crop.
Okay. So when the text says they will not have an inheritance, that means they will not have an inheritance as the other tribes have. They will have an inheritance. In fact, technically speaking, there will be some land involved, albeit a relatively very small amount, as we'll see. But their inheritance will be unique among the Israelites. And in fact, in some places, God would say, I, the Lord, am their inheritance. Okay? And he says that about all of his people, in fact. So let's look at that. Now, the background for these chapters, I didn't send this out, but if you did any digging, you probably found yourself in the book of Numbers, chapter 35, maybe Deuteronomy 19. There's a smattering of other places that refer to the inheritance of the Levites. And, you know, as you know, so much of Moses' instruction in those two books looked ahead in view of them entering the land, just as further testimony of the fact that God, this is a settled matter. God is giving the land. So he is acting as king of the land, as one who owns the land, and he is giving it to his people, treating them as sons, and eventually they will go in, and that's the part of history we're in here, where they go in and lay claim to that inheritance that they've been given. So, in these chapters, Numbers 35, Deuteronomy 19, God is giving Moses all kinds of instruction about the cities. And so, when Israel comes into the land, it's just a matter of executing what God said. It's a matter of carrying out what he said. And under Joshua, they did that. Now, the Levites, we say they didn't have a land inheritance, but obviously they needed somewhere to live, right? They're not going to float around in the air. They have to be on terra firma and have some place to hang their hat, as it were. And so what does God give the Levites? So they'll have somewhere to live. He gives these cities. Again, 48 of them in all. Now, where would they come from? Where would they be? Where, Danny?
Among the tribes.
In one place, he says to the Israelites, you are going to give them these cities. Okay? So, and in fact, when you look through Joshua 21, all those cities, I think 1 Chronicles 6 lists all these off as well. But these cities are indeed found in every other part of the land, every other tribe's inheritance. So a total of 48 cities. Now that would include the cities, but there was a little bit of land around the outside. In Numbers actually gives them the instructions as to how to calculate how much land. You measure out from the city walls a certain distance, and so that defines a perimeter. and everything inside of that. There's the city. And what would that land around the city be for?
Pasture.
Yeah, pasture lands. In fact, does it say it in Joshua?
It says it in Numbers 35.
It says it in Numbers 35. But when the cities are listed off in Joshua 21, Joshua 21 is one of those chapters where you get into kind of a, it's very repetitive. And he lists a city, and then what does he say after that? Name of city. What's the expression after that? With their pasture lands. You think, how many times are we going to have to read the phrase with their pasture lands? Well, that's a matter of God's instruction. So that emphasis should not be lost on us. Okay? God, all of this is God doing exactly what he said he would do. So let's don't ever forget that. So, yeah, it's a little tedious, but boy, as we get into this, I hope we can see there are a number of powerful parallels to be made to us today. Someone calculated the total area of these 48 cities. I do have a map. There you go. That map looks a little bit better than some of the maps I've thrown up here. Every red dot would represent, of course, one of these 48 cities. So, yes, they're going to... Now think about the importance of that. We're not going to talk about that right now, but I want you to think about the practical importance of having Levites living everywhere throughout the land, okay? Someone calculated the total area, and I might have tried to do this, but somebody beat me to it. So I thought, well, I'm not going to, at this point, try to duplicate the calculation. Total area for these 48 cities, and I'm assuming they relied on Numbers 35 about how many feet out from the walls, and then you just have to know how to calculate the area of a circle, basically. A total of 15 square miles. So if you can wrap your mind around that, 15 square miles. And then they further calculated that as a percentage of the entire land area of Canaan. You want to guess what the percentage is? Now this is a percentage.
0.1.
What?
0.1.
You got it.
No, that's my guess.
Oh, that's the number I've got here. Wow, I thought that was going to be a fun little exercise, Casey.
Sorry.
No, it's but think about the point of that. When God says they're not going to get a land inheritance, I mean, come on. 0.1%? I mean, they're one of the 12 tribes. So, in a large sense, that's right. They have enough just to live on. So what would the Levites continue to be dependent upon? Or upon whom? Upon God and upon
the gifts of the people that they were serving.
The gifts of the people, they'll still be dependent on the other tribes. Their sustenance will come to them through the various offerings. There's one place where it talks about don't neglect a Levite living in your land. And I think it's also important to point out that the Levites receive their inheritance where in the order of things? They're not, spoiler alert, it's not the first.
Last.
Yeah. So think of the teaching of Jesus. The Levites are painted as people who were to be servants in every way. They're ministering at the tent of meeting. Of course, the sons of Aaron constitute the priesthood specifically. They're all of their duties and responsibilities, and all of that has been fleshed out in the books of Moses, what the descendants of Kohath were to do, Gershon and Merari, I think were the three sons of Levi. Okay, so 48 cities, When you dig into, you know, which of those three umbrellas these cities fall under, I found it interesting that close to half of the cities went to the Kohathites. And then another 13 went to Gershon and another 12 to Merari. And the cities of the Kohathites centered around Judah, Benjamin, that area. And as you look ahead to the temple and all of that, it makes a lot of sense. So there's a lot of God's wisdom is on display here. But then when you look at the cities of refuge, we're gonna see the Kohathites had two and had two. Each of the three families of the Levites had two cities of refuge each. Questions or thoughts, comments about that? It's a lot of detail, but a lot to reflect on. Okay. Now let's think about these cities of refuge. So of the 48 cities, six of those were to be cities of refuge. And I want you to be thinking about why God would have cities of refuge also be cities for Levites. I mean, couldn't God have picked any six cities he wanted? Well, yes, of course, right? We don't even need to know. Of course he could have. Danny?
He did.
He did. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, when I look back in Deuteronomy 4, I could see where Moses selected the three east of the Jordan. Remember, there were three east of the Jordan and three west of the Jordan. In fact, let's move that over here. And now we've got blue dots. You see where the blue dots are the cities of refuge. And they're spread evenly throughout the land, okay? In Numbers 35, I believe it talks about, there's an instruction given that says you need to build roads between these cities, I believe. Those roads were to be maintained. What would be the practical importance of that? Well, when you think about what the cities of refuge were for, okay? So they were to be accessible. So it wasn't just designated the cities, there's all of the instruction that goes with it, including accessibility. Now, for whom would these cities offer refuge? Danny?
Well, some of them would be people that were unjustly judged.
Okay.
That they could flee to. Looking at this map, it pops in my mind how bad company corrupts good morals. God gave the perfect plan here. Gave them the highest odds in the world to make it.
Yeah.
By the distribution of all these cities and the refuges. And
yeah. That's right. So, to your point, these would be cities for people, I think you use the expression, unjustly judged. In fact, probably no judgment has been rendered beyond the family of the deceased, right? So, what's the scenario here? Somebody dies. Tell me about those circumstances. Casey?
It was a premeditation. It was either an accident or, I guess here you might call it manslaughter today.
Yeah, as opposed to murder. And that distinction is made in the language.
Yeah, without premeditation and did not hate beforehand. So.
Yeah, the word unintentionally shows up in my translation.
Yep, that's in verse 3.
They did not lie in wait. It was unintentional. We might insert the word accidental. I think Numbers 35 says now if he hit him with an implement of iron or hit him with a stone, that would point to some measure of forethought, right? But just in without any intent to hurt, but maybe in the passion of the moment, something happens and quite unintentionally somebody dies. Or maybe somebody's just swinging an axe. That's one of the examples I read. And so, I mean, you really want to make sure that axe head is secure when you start to wail on, you know, a piece of wood. But the axe head slips off, and I mean, in an instant, think about this person. You're sitting there chopping wood, and in an instant, your life has changed. And when you look at the instructions about the city of refuge, your life is really about to change. So, of course, news is going to get to the family of the person who has died. And it's kind of a wild card. You're not sure how they're going to react. But in prospect of, I mean, anticipating the possibility that the family of the deceased might want revenge, then how do we maintain justice? God provides provision. That was repetitive. He provides a way for the person to go to a place of safety until what? Until it can be examined by the proper authorities and judged, okay? Properly judged. So this is for the manslayer. I mean, God goes to great lengths to point out, this is not for a murderer, okay? Now, again, how are we going to sort out who's who? That's what their justice system was to sort out. Yes, sir.
Looking at this afresh, you said they might want revenge. I would take a little bit of issue with that. It looks like the blood avenger shall take life for life.
Yeah.
So it's creating an ordered society without a policing force.
Right.
And then creating a way in order for justice and mercy to occur.
Sure.
But in this society, it looks like the family shall take a life for a life.
Yeah.
Not optional. And so that's why the provisions.
Well, God knows human nature, right? All I was saying was that, there may be a case where, somebody reacts with less passion. I'm not sure who that would be. So I was thinking more of, I suppose there might be an exception to that. But yeah, the language almost speaks of it as, yeah, this is going to happen, and so here's what we're going to do to maintain order.
And I had always thought of it like you had described. Well, what if it is an accident and there's a witness and then we can handle it right there?
Right.
Is that how God set it up?
Mm.
That's my question.
Like maybe regardless, you're going to go to this city and this is how we're going to. This is the procedure regardless.
Does it create a judging mechanism within a society?
Okay. I appreciate that.
You know, that makes a good point because in Deuteronomy,
Yeah, so this is, I mean, the more you reflect on this, the more this is God completely with full knowledge of human nature and our tendencies. And so we see his wisdom in setting all of this forth. So what happens when the manslayer gets to the city? What's the first thing that has to happen? See, we when I grew up studying about this, okay, you'd go to this city, and then I didn't think much about it. And studying this again, it's like, wow, there's a lot to this. So what's the first thing that happens, Casey?
He stands at the gate and states his case in the hearing of the elders of the city.
Okay, so he stands and he's got to make his case to the elders of the city. Now, look at the map. Who are the elders of the city?
Levites.
Right? You see God's wisdom? I mean, Levites presumably are going to be what?
Keepers of the law.
What?
They're keepers of the law.
Keepers of the law. And as such, give me some adjectives that would describe them.
Fair.
Fair. Righteous. Just. Very fair-minded.
Educated.
So they got to make their case. Okay? And so then a judgment has to be rendered, right? Because when you read Numbers 35, okay, this isn't for the murderer. Well, who's going to, you know, somebody spiritually minded has to make a judgment about this up front. So assuming the elders believe him, then what? Where does it go? What's the next thing? They take him into the city. Go ahead.
Because I take him into the city, give him a place to stay until the matter can be presented to the congregation.
Okay. So give him a place to stay. And how long will they live there? I saw two things in my study of this that would determine how long they stay. The first one is until the congregation, until he's examined before the congregation. But there's another provision or another stipulation.
Death of the high priest.
Yeah.
Until the priest that dies, that was
alive at that time, yeah. Now, how long will that be? You see what I mean? Even if you're innocent, has your life changed? One day you're chopping wood. And now, you've got to live somewhere else. That brings up questions I don't have the answer to. I mean, it's like, well, what about this and what about this? I don't know. Casey?
You know, it also talks about that person fleeing to these cities. So when I think of fleeing, you realize something's happened. You're making for the city.
Oh, sure.
You're not going home and packing. You're not doing all this other stuff.
Yeah.
You got to get there.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they must live there until they've stood trial and until the death of the high priest. And in Numbers 35, Deuteronomy 17, this will all be assessed on the basis of more than one witness. It can't just be one witness. And so there's that important detail. Now, what's God trying to accomplish here? We've spoken a little bit about this, but let's talk some more about it. What's God trying to accomplish?
Fairness and purging of evil.
Fairness and purging of evil. Good. What else? Yeah, sure.
I think there's some protection also to the person referred to as the avenger of blood. Because, you know, if your son was accidentally killed or your dad was accidentally killed, then you could premeditatively go try and take a life.
Yes.
Which brings you before judgment. And so I think there's some protection there for that person as well that God put in place.
Keeps them from doing something rash that they're going to regret.
There should be some protection for the person's family at flee also, that hey, this is being taken care of in God's way.
True.
You know, don't hold it against us.
Yeah, there is a provision. God has spoken to this. What does God not want happen? The shedding of what kind of blood?
Innocent
blood. Go to Numbers 35. Verse 33 and 34. Numbers 35, verse 33 says, in you know, at the close of all this instruction, so you shall not, now notice the language, you shall not pollute the land. And he connects that with the shedding of innocent blood. To shed innocent blood would be to pollute the land. So, I mean, obviously, this is going to serve to discourage violence across the board, including the rash taking of unjust revenge. You shall not pollute the land in which you are, for blood pollutes the land, and no expiation can be made for the land for the blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it. Now look at 34. You shall not defile the land in which you live. And what's the next expression? What?
And where I dwell.
In the midst of which I dwell. For I, the Lord, am dwelling in the midst of the sons of Israel. So that raises the stakes, doesn't it? And gives you an even higher reason for why we need to seek, why we need to do justice and love kindness and walk humbly with your God. Norman?
Mark, it's kind of interesting that you see here an echo of the same language you find in Genesis when Cain kills Abel. The Lord comes and asks Abel, where is your brother? He said, in conversation takes place, and the Lord tells him, because your brother's blood cries out from the ground.
From the ground.
So it's interesting you find prior to the law the same teaching, if you will, by the Lord that it shows up here in the law as well.
And you know how that defiles the land, defiles the ground. Dan.
Question. Who is the blood avenger? Is it like she said that with there? Is it I'm trying to get I the father am trying to get even for whoever somebody did to William, or is there someone that's appointed or what?
Could be someone who's appointed. I wonder that too. Some family member, someone appointed by the family, someone who would go and get them and bring them back to be executed. So, I mean, their purpose, I mean, is built into their name. It's they're serving that purpose of avenging a death. But specifically who that might be in any circumstance, I couldn't say.
I couldn't find any reference to happening with that.
No, it just says avenger of blood. Anybody else read anything else that would shed some light on that?
Danny? I always thought of it more like a bounding person, but like you say, the scripture
I don't know that it was a bounty hunter sort of thing. Yeah, good question. I just don't know the answer to that. Now, what made the cities of refuge concept work? I want you to think about this. Could this process go awry? I mean, this assumes some things, doesn't it? I mean, for this to work, tell me about the leaders of these Levites in the cities. In these cities. We've said, I mean, there's a reason why God picked Levites. Right? What if they cease to be all that? Then,
if they took bribes, released somebody, or accept somebody who was actually a murderer, protected by the law, I mean, the whole thing would go awry.
Or refused to take someone in who should have been granted refuge. Yeah. So this would lead to all sorts of injustice in the land. Let's see, the Israelites struggled with that throughout their history. So this put a lot of responsibility upon the people, certainly upon the Levites. So they must agree to give him a fair hearing and do it out of a respect for God. They must agree to take him in and give him refuge. They must agree not to turn the person over to the aforementioned avenger of blood. So the Israelites, for this to work, must embrace values that are anchored in the very character of God. That's the only way this works. Right? And what are those characteristics of God that are needed, that are all over this?
Honesty.
Fairness, mercy,
justice.
Justice. generosity. I mean, taking somebody in, giving them a place to live, provide. I mean, because they, it's like Casey said, there wasn't time to pack. Everything has to be provided for them. And they're basically providing all of that. So all of those characteristics. Now, are there any connections to Christ in that? How about Matthew 11, verse 28? Somebody know that passage? I bet if I give you the first couple words, you can finish it. Come to me. What's that sound like?
Refuge.
Sounds like refuge, doesn't it? When would a person have freedom from, finally have freedom from guilt and fear and could be at peace? When the high priest died. Let's see, we have a high priest who died. And because of that, we can have freedom from guilt and fear and can live at peace. Obviously, every analogy is limited.
It kind of makes you look at the life of the blood going into the ground. Full parallel.
Yeah, the whole concept of lifeblood definitely has a connection with Christ. Something else, I'll pass it on for what it's worth. You do your own study. The meanings of the names of the six cities of refuge. I found this interesting. Kadesh, sanctuary. Shechem, shoulder, as in bearing a burden. Hebron, communion or fellowship. Golan, rejoicing. Ramoth, uplifted. Bezer, fortress. Found that interesting. Other connections to Christ that you see in this. That's been a section in our study guide, and we haven't talked a lot about that with our lessons, but I thought, well, this would be a good opportunity to just camp out on that part of our study guide.
Mercy is, for me, the takeaways, the big takeaways from the city of refuge. But the high priest part just reminds me of the laborers in the vineyard. It reinforces what he's trying to get across about mercy there.
Yeah.
Where we want to think in terms of fairness, and mercy is not about fairness. It's about giving grace.
It's about not getting what you deserve. Yeah.
And so, to me, when the high priest died, it's just like the laboring man. Came early, came late, doesn't matter. Mercy.
Right. Right. Yeah. Did he stay in the city a short time or a long time? Bill?
The Hebrew word for avenger is kinsman or redeemer.
Ah, okay.
So
good.
We see that connection in Ruth, and then we see that connection in the New Testament as a redeemer.
Okay. Very good. Everybody catch that?
No.
The meaning of the word avenger is the word for kinsman, you said, as in kinsman redeemer. So story of Ruth, for instance. Yeah, Chris, from the booth.
God also uses that term in Exodus when he says, I will redeem you with a mighty axe and outstretched. He uses that same word.
The same word.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, so as always, when you dig into the details, boy, it's rich, isn't it? It's rich. Yeah.
And the system from day one all the way through to us is still there.
Yeah. And we need to humble ourselves before God. Other parallels to the people of God today. I was thinking about us and our calling in Christ and thinking about these Levites. I see some parallels there. For instance, Christ never commanded us to build some community where we isolate ourselves from the rest of creation. He wants us scattered throughout the earth. That's a theme that runs throughout the Bible as well.
And a highway to get there.
And a highway to get there.
Isaiah.
Roads that are built and maintained. And when people come within our midst, they should find a lot of the same elements of refuge. They should find it's a place where the character of God rules, and they should find mercy, and they should find generosity, and they should find justice, you see. So there's that level of thought about this as well. Of course, the entire section, Joshua 21, verses 43 through 45, gives us one of the, I think it's a pretty important passage in the whole Bible story, where we see that, you know, the Spirit nails it down. This promise, the land promise, has been fulfilled. Nothing of which the Lord said failed to come to pass. All came to pass. So briefly, what would be some other themes? We probably touched on the idea again that the Lord is your inheritance. And as we just hinted at, the concept of Levites being throughout the land, of refuge being within reach, and of course the value of innocent life would be some examples of some themes from this part of the book. Final thoughts, observations?
The refuge within reach, we didn't talk about that a lot, but all within a day, you know, most of them at high, so you could look up and see. You knew where to turn, and
yeah.
You could get there.
That's a good point, that especially on the west side of the Jordan, all these cities were in the hill country. So refuge is up on the hill. I think there's probably a parallel there as well. Refuge is within sight. Refuge is accessible. But it falls on the person to seek it. Good. Appreciate you bringing that up. All right, well, I don't hear a second bell and I'm done. So that's a rare thing. So let's call it Wednesday night. We're going to conclude our discussion of our spiritual inheritance. We hope you can be back at 7 p.m.